Welcome to the Boldcast, your AMS2 podcast. Today we have something very special. Our guest today is a household name in sim racing YouTube circles. Since its inception in 2017, his channel is what I would consider to be the first stop for news, updates, reviews, you name it, across all relevant sim racing titles. He's on a first name basis with the likes of Jimmy Broadbent, Jardier, David Perel. Should be in the Rolodex of any sim racing developer moving forward. Currently the lead writer for the race department, I introduce to you Mike Smith of Sim Racing 604. Mike, welcome to the Boldcast.
Man, thank you so much for having me. I'm a fan.
It's so awesome to have you here, Mike. The way I like to start is to ask about your sim racing origin story. Where did it all begin?
I mean, if you consider Gran Turismo to be a racing sim, then it was definitely that. I got into it on release, which was 98 or 99. And then that was strictly controller. And then played every single Gran Turismo. And then in, I guess it was 2017, I got a notification on PlayStation that something called Assetto Corsa was coming. And bought Assetto Corsa, downloaded it, started playing it, and I was terrible. I'm still terrible, by the way. But I started playing it, and I even on the most basic level of career, even the first races in career, I couldn't keep up with the AI, and I'm like, what am I doing here? Like, I've been playing racing games, racing sims my whole life, pretty much, and I can't even complete a lap. And I started doing some research, and there's sort of two things that it pointed to. Number one, if you want to get fast, you need a wheel. And number two, you should be racing on PC. So that, of course, is just a different experience on PC. So I took the first piece of advice and went out and got a used G29, which I still have. I think I paid about $200 Canadian for it, which is, you know, 150 US, so still a smoking deal. And got into it, started playing Assetto Corsa with the wheel, and just it felt like, I don't know, people describe in music like the first time they heard Nirvana or something like that, and it just changes your perspective on music. Playing Assetto Corsa with a wheel just blew my mind, just opened up a whole new world that wasn't open to me before, and I just totally caught the bug from there.
All right, so when was that next step? Like, we obviously started a YouTube channel, mm-hmm. Sim Racing 604. What made you make that leap?
It's such a silly story. I mean, the whole early stages, the first, you know, moments of my channel were so silly. Like, I chose the area code where I live as the name of my channel, which is, you know, the most boring, benign thing you could possibly choose as a channel name. But I did it, and I was racing, because I did make the jump to PC, and I found out you could download Ayrton Senna's MP4 4 car. And I thought it was the coolest thing that you could be immersed in this guy's car, who's, of course, passed on, and the car is long since retired. Uh-huh. And I thought it was the coolest thing that you could just drive this in the comfort of your home with a wheel. And I was so obsessed with sim racing that my day job, I missed it. So I was like, I want to watch my laps back. I think that would be cool. So I just started uploading videos to YouTube just so I could watch them kind of on my lunch break, which sounds totally egotistical. I wasn't watching it back and thinking, wow, this guy can really drive. I was just watching it because I thought it was a cool thing to look at. And somehow people found me, and it just kind of, you know, gained momentum from there. So really, there was no big plan. Like, I would love to tell you that I had a business plan on how I could, you know, reach 1,000 subs within a year or something, but it wasn't mm-hmm. even close to that. It was just me kind of wanting to watch my laps back.
Right. Okay, that's interesting. And I was going to ask you about your first video, but you preempted me. I was going to give you a quick quiz. Do you remember what your first video was? It was the McLaren MP4 /6
MP4-4, I believe. Was it 4?
March 6th. I have it right written down here. March 6th, 2017.
You've done your research,
video.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Please don't watch that, by the way. Oh, man, that's a rough one. But that was it.
Sorry. Is that the one that we're still waiting to come to AMS2 as well? Which
yes, I think so. That was, yeah, that's, I think.
For which one is it? Okay.
Yeah. Ayrton's most famous one. I think most famous McLaren. I think
I believe that's the case. Yeah, and I guess the sort of communication channel is open between Reza and McLaren. So you know, it's a very real possibility that they could make that happen.
So the next step in the channel, obviously, it was an evolution from the beginning. It started off with you just uploading the videos just for fun. What made you start pushing the envelope? What made you make you start making adjustments to your content?
It was sort of, I don't know what the correct analogy is, but basically somehow people found my silly laps at Red Bull Ring in the MP4-6. And so I got up to 20 subscribers and 50 subscribers, and I'm like, oh, well, this is interesting. People are finding me. So I was like, I better build some sort of structure. So a channel that I was really into at the time, and I'm still into, I consider him a friend, is Ferrari Man 601. And if you watch kind of the first year or so of my channel and I start getting into mod reviews, it's a direct copy of his work. Like, it starts out in the showroom and spinning around the car, giving some facts about the car, and then jumping out onto the track, driving anywhere from, you know, 2 to 5 laps depending on the track, and then finishing off with a full volume TV replay. That's a direct copy of Ferrari Man 601. So he was a huge inspiration for my channel. And so it was just kind of like people, for whatever reason, started following it, and then I had to build some structure, so I just copied his, frankly.
Right. And did you have any early challenges? Like, what were the biggest challenges for you when you were going over this evolution in development? Was it technical? Was it, you know, was it
personal? I would say it was personal. Because you get these sort of mental hurdles you have to overcome. Because I remember before I started getting into the Ferrari Man 601 structure, I would just show TV replays, because TV replays can hide a lot of flaws in your driving. And I remember talking to friends and, like, you know, holy smokes, my channel has 50 subscribers, my channel has 100 subscribers. And they were like, oh, okay, do you drive like the other guys? And I'm like, no, I don't want anyone to see me drive. Like, I'm not a good sim racer. I don't want people to see me drive. And so it was that mental hurdle of, you know, putting myself out there and being subject to criticism for my lack of driving skill. That was one of the big ones. And then after that, putting my voice on camera. It was just like, do people want to hear this, you know, monotone Canadian voice? And so that was a big step, getting that out there. And then the ultimate hurdle that any YouTuber faces is, you know, putting their self on camera. And so those were the biggest challenges, frankly. Like, I've been very fortunate in terms of gaining a following. I still to this day don't fully understand why people chose to sort of hitch their wagon to me. In terms of, you know, having to fight to get subscribers, I've been very fortunate on that front. But the biggest struggles have all been personal and just overcoming my sort of mental blocks.
Well, you have, I would say, the most famous voice in sim racing now. So that's a testament to how everyone enjoys your work and your channel. But
oh, thanks, man.
We've moved into, you've overcome this block. You're out there now. When you're developing the channel, I guess to today, you obviously have developed your own style. How did you find that style? Like, when you approach a video, a concept, you know, how did that come about? Like, obviously it came from the roots of, you know, Ferrari. Yeah. Now you're Mike Sim Racing 604. How did you develop that distinct style?
I'm still finding it, if I'm being honest. I don't know that I do have a distinct style. Like, I mean, if you watch a Super GT video, it's very him. And if you go back to when Jimmy Broadbent was in his climb from, like, let's say 100,000 to 500,000 subscribers, and he had the bandana and doing the live streams, that was his style. I don't know that there's anything distinctly me to this day. Like, if Kunos drops a new title tomorrow, I don't necessarily have a review style. If RaceSim Studio drops a new car mod tomorrow, I know generally what I'm going to do, but it's not my style. It's borrowed elements from others. And so I'm still trying to find that style, if I'm being honest. But it's not something I'm too concerned about. Like, I get it in terms of branding and being distinct in this industry. It would be good to have my own style, but other than my, you know, intro screen and closeout screen, I don't think that there's anything uniquely me. So yeah, it's an interesting question. I haven't really thought about that, but I don't know that I have a distinct style, frankly.
Well, I guess if I was going to help you, I would say that your style is that you wrap everything up very, very well. I think better than a lot of other YouTube channels. As far as reviews, from start to finish, you know what to expect when watching Sim Racing 604. You get all of the major bullet points. You get, you know, your personal preferences. You get some history about the car, a little bit of knowledge about the car, and you wrap it up. So basically, you only need to watch one video. And I think that's just what my personal belief is why you've had so much success and why I go to your channel. But let's talk about major milestones. You know, I think every YouTuber probably has moments where they're like, oh my God, you know, 100 subscribers. Oh my God. 1,000. Oh my God, 5,000. I watched your 5,000 sub video. Wow. I think it was like a three minute long one. So what was that like when you hit milestones? Is it always a shock to you? What's that like?
The milestones you can kind of see coming. Sometimes you get to them faster than you think. Like for the first 3 years, I think I was averaging 5,000 subs a year, and it was more or less like clockwork. So you can see those coming. I try to never take it for granted. Like I'm still totally humbled and blown away by the fact that, you know, I think it's up to 37,000 subscribers now, and I'm blown away by that. But at the same time, those are predictable. The big moments, the holy cow moments, are the people you talk to. Like it's mind-blowing to me that, you know, I can DM Jimmy Broadbent right now. Like we have a chat going on Twitter, and it's just like, this guy knows who I am. That's pretty amazing. Or you get an email from Kunos, or, you know, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, but you get an email from Reza Studio saying, hey, we're releasing Automobilista 2. Here's an alpha key if you're interested. And it's just like, wow, how do these people find me? That is so mind blowing. Like, these are people I'm fans of, and they somehow know me. Like, what is that? That's certainly the most, the moments that sort of take you back that's not the right term. The moments that sort of blow your mind and say, holy smokes, like I'm, you know, doing something that people are actually noticing. That's pretty remarkable. So.
And what's funny is that's happening right now. Like this literally in reverse. For me, it's happening with you. But yeah, let's dig deeper in your first developer contact. I don't know how they go about doing it. Do they just send you an email and say, here's a key? Do you feel any pressure when they do that? Do you feel like you have any pressure? Who was the first developer to reach out to you? What was the game, and what was your mindset like at that time? Besides just being, oh my God,
yeah, this is a great question. The first, I'm trying to think of the first. It might have been Kunos, I guess, for the GT4 DLC, and I remember Jimmy Broadbent got an invite. Chris Hay got an invite. There was a private Discord that we all joined. Jardier was in there, and we could all just just trade notes and sort of geek out over the new GT4 cars. And we're all under NDA, of course, so it was just strictly kept to that Discord. But that was big. It didn't feel like and this is not a slight on anyone in there, but I just personally felt like I didn't belong. Like, I mean, I think David Perel, who, you know, races GT3 cars in real life, was in there. I'm just like, how did I get in here? Everyone was very nice and very welcoming, and we're all trading ideas on, you know, what content we would release when once the embargo was lifted. And it was just it still feels out of place. Like, even now when I get a key to you know, have an advanced try of some new piece of software, some new mod or something, it feels like they sent it to the wrong guy or something. I still haven't come to grips with the fact that I, you know, have any reach in the industry. But yeah, so to answer your question, what did it feel like? It felt immediately humbling, and I felt like I was out of my element. Like this is bigger than me. And I know people, you know, that sounds silly. It's like, it's sim racing, get over yourself. But to me, sim racing is so much of my life right now, and I absolutely love it. Right. So the people like or the groups like Kunos and Reza, it's so amazing to hear from them. And yeah, such a you know, pinch me moment when you hear from them.
Right. Yeah. So did you feel any pressure to, I mean, I think if it was Kunos with the GT4s, it was probably kind of easy. They were just so wonderful when they came out of the box. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, since that point, do you feel any pressure or influence to, you know, say positive things only? I mean, generally you're a very positive channel already.
Yeah.
But do you feel any reluctance to say, you know, ooh, this isn't quite right?
It's a great question. It's something I've put a lot of thought into, because people do say that I'm too nice, and you know, I get criticisms of, oh, you're only saying nice things because they sent you a Steam key in advance. And that is not true. Like, I've never once, with hardware or with software, I've never once got notes that said you have to say this about the product. There, sometimes you do get just sort of bullet point notes saying, here are the key features, but I've never once got a script, and there's never been anything off limits for me. So I'm free to say whatever. But yeah, generally, in terms of, you know, positive weighing sort of praise versus criticism, I do try and keep it positive, because I'm so blown away by what sim racing is these days that it's hard for me to even see the negative sometimes. And also, I think what people might not understand is there's a lot of stuff that I don't review, because if I, and this has happened a number of times, and I always hate to do this, but there's been people who've emailed me saying, hey Mike, we'd like you to try this, and I tried it and it's just not for me. And rather than put out a video that embarrasses them, and even if it's a free mod, chances are this person has put dozens, if not hundreds, of hours into creating it. And right. For me to go on my channel and say, this thing drives so poorly, and look at this terrible interior render, I don't want to do that. This person has put a good chunk of their life into it, and I don't think anyone is served by me going on and criticizing. The best thing for me at that point is just to send a reply email saying, thank you, I tried it, it's not for me. I wish you luck. If you, you know, do any future updates addressing this and this, I would love to try it again. Please keep in contact. So that's kind of the way I go. Going back to the balance. So for me, it's like, I'm so blown away by what sim racing is with our current level of hardware and software, that it's easy for me to be positive, because I just love sim racing. Yeah. And if there are things in the negative that that overwhelm the positive of something, then I will just simply not make content about it.
Right. So it comes through in your channel too, because I think there's one thing that, there's a perspective that people out there miss, and that's that, you know, people enjoy sim racing games for different elements of them. Mm-hmm. Not everyone's the same. Like, someone may be hooked to VR, and so that may be the only reason why they like, you know, that's how they choose the game. If you go in negative and you say, this isn't good, I mean, you're kind of cutting out a lot of people that may find that game particularly interesting, and that's basically
exactly
just...
Right.
Yeah, so let's talk about the state of sim racing today. We have a lot of titles out there now, and there's a lot of combat, it seems like, and they're making each other better from what I've seen. But what's your impression?
I think it's very, very strong. I think we're still a niche community that's sort of fighting to grow, because we see a lot of the major licenses like F1 and NASCAR and WRC still leaning heavily towards the accessible gaming market rather than the hardcore sim market. And every time there is a release in one of those categories, it's shock from the sim community saying, hey, this tire model still stinks, why didn't you improve it versus last year? But we do, so there's that. So it's like we're still trying to sort of fight and get more developers on board with the hardcore side of things. But at the same time, I mean, there's still more sim content than you could ever really hope to digest. Like, I mean, Automobilista 2, I know it has its critics, but I absolutely love it. And, you know, I think we're lucky to have it. Assetto Corsa, I think we're 7 years past release of that title, still going strong. There's new cars and tracks being developed every single day for it. Assetto Corsa Competizione, it sort of breaks the mold of, you know, having a license for a race series and making it game style. They had a license for a series and they went hardcore sim. I think that's pretty incredible. I love that title. So there's a lot out there for us. And, you know, we're starting to see hardware prices start to creep down, like Fanatics CSL DD. I don't know if it will actually change the hardware market, but for what it is, I think it's an excellent, excellent concept for a product. And, it's just becoming more and more. And by the way, I should mention that I think it's pretty incredible that it's commonplace to see real world racing drivers with sim rigs at home. Like, we see that all the time now. And 2 years ago, it was rare. Like, you'd see somebody, like an F1 driver or something, post on social media them driving their sim rig at home. Yeah. And everybody in the sim community would be like, holy smokes, did you see whoever it was that, let's just use Marcus Ericsson. He's fresh on my mind because he got a win at Indy yesterday. But, you know, did you see Marcus Ericsson in his sim rig? And everybody would go, wow, that's amazing. He's using this and this gear. And now it's like every driver posts pics of their sim rig. So pretty amazing to see how far it's come. And I think we definitely benefited from the worldwide stay-at-home event last year.
That was a bizarre event, by the way.
Yeah.
Just seeing... Last year, spring, that was really bizarre. The virtual GPs and NASCAR was on iRacing on television, wasn't it?
Right.
All of that was really bizarre because I've been sim racing for years.
Yeah.
So watching some of the how that has gone on has been interesting too. I know Lando and Max are probably of that generation and have sort of bridged that gap a lot easier than some of the older guys, but I've seen Tony Kanaan, I've seen Simone Pagenaud. Did you hear about Bubba Wallace losing a sponsor because of his esports antics? He got in some scuffs in iRacing in NASCAR with Clint Bowyer, and he quit the race, and his sponsor dropped him on Twitter right then and there. So it's definitely, you know, that was really cool to see sim racing getting that noticeability and notability from more wider racing circles. But I wanted to talk about ACC a little bit, and I think it's a very unique sim, very popular. It was the first sim that I can recall that it's true single class. They went with they obviously did their homework. GT3 has been the most popular sim racing class for a long time, so they went whole hog and decided let's just focus on one class and then tighten it up, make it a true sim. And I think that was different than, obviously, the F1 series and the NASCAR series. They made it a true sim. Now that they've tapped that, like, where do they go from there? We have that now. Were we looking at ACC2? Or is that sort of just like they grabbed it when it was hot, and now it's just going to go away? I don't mean to bash it. I'm just saying that life changes. You know, there's things that... They've tapped into it and it was hot, but you know, how do they keep that fizzle, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at.
And I suppose I would answer it in two parts in terms of where Kunos goes from here. It's hard to say. I mean, obviously Assetto Corsa 1 is still immensely popular for them. I think if I'm not mistaken, it's about twice as popular in terms of concurrent users as ACC. Granted, it's had, you know, two or three times as long to build that fan base. But because of that, I think the community expects a mod-friendly title for Kunos's next follow-up. But I'm not convinced that that's the way Kunos will go. And I did a video about this not too long ago, and it wouldn't surprise me to see Kunos go with something single make again. I would love to see them tackle open wheelers. Something like a spec series. IndyCar has been claimed obviously by Motorsport Games, but you know, if they took on say F2 or F3 or even some of the smaller European series, and just, you know, put together the incredible tracks that they're able to produce and combine that with a spec series race environment, I think it would be amazing. But I honestly have no idea, but that's the way I think they will go, rather than the Assetto Corsa model, because I think the Assetto Corsa model, they built that engine from scratch, and I think it was just so much back end work on the programming side. I don't know that they'll really want to take that on, but who knows. They've sort of positioned themselves in two separate markets, mods and no mods, and the world is really their oyster. They can do what they want with it. But I was going to say the other part of that is it's difficult with the single make. Like if you take a big license like IndyCar, like NASCAR, like F1, that license costs so much that of course the developer will want to recoup it. So they tend towards games. Let's make something that everyone can play rather than a hardcore sim that's just going to frustrate people. So I think that, you know, somebody like a Kunos probably won't get a major license because they would then have to make a game just to recoup the costs of what they put out to get that license.
That makes a ton of sense. Yeah, it does, for sure. So let's, you know, my channel is AMS2 focused. So let's talk about AMS2 now. So
absolutely,
when you got contacted by Reza for was it an alpha key or was it a beta key?
Yeah, at the time they had their beta channel or their beta forum up, but a few of us got alpha keys. So I was always a build ahead of the forum. And so that was kind of weird unto itself, but that's a story for a different time. But yeah, so it was still in alpha, and I can't remember who the channels were, but there was a few of us that were selected to put out content once the embargo lifted. So I was pretty excited to get that.
So what was your first impression when you first got your hand on some of the cars? What was your first car that you actually drove? Was there any moments where you thought that there was something to it? Did you feel it was rough around the edges and you kind of wanted to hold back until it developed a little bit more? What was your first thoughts when you grabbed
it? I don't remember the first car I drove. It was still rough around the edges. I remember the AI was more or less undrivable, and I think if I could dig up my first video on AMS2, I think I addressed as much. Like I just simply said it's in beta, it's not ready, like the AI is just a mess. And as I recall, they would just bunch up on lap one. You had to wait for them to sort of sort themselves out before you could get any sort of race. But I remember being, I wouldn't say floored by the driving quality, but I sort of got the bigger picture right away. I knew they would keep working on the feel of the car, but I was like, okay, this is cool. There's something here. It was a lot of the sort of South American niche that AMS1 had, but it looked tremendous. And you know, they were using obviously the Madness engine, and one of the big things in my mind was, is it going to sound as bad as Project Cars 2? Because that's one thing I could never get by. I'm overall a fan of Project Cars 2, but the sounds, I could just never get by the sounds, and I was fearful that that would happen. But thankfully it didn't. And so you know, it looked great, it sounded really good, car and track selection was really good. And I was just like, okay, I can kind of see where they're going with this. I think this is actually going to be a really, really good title. Still needs a lot of polish, but I could see the sort of the ember that would light the fire, if you will. Like I could just see that this was going to be something.
So was there a moment where you knew, obviously, I think from your, some of the things I've heard from you before is AMS2 is now your number two behind ACC. And I'm really happy to hear that, to be honest. What made it your number two now? What's going on with it?
It's funny. It took on a role for me that I didn't think it would take, because it's a hot lapping sim, and I like to call it a scenario sim. So if I'm going to race, I love to introduce elements like time progression or like weather progression. It's obviously really, really good at that. But I also just enjoy lapping in it. And I didn't think I would get there because Assetto Corsa, in my opinion, is the king of hot lapping sims. I don't think any sim has ever done it as good as Assetto Corsa does. I mean, basically you can drive any car on any track of any era. And that's no small thing. Like that's pretty incredible that it's become that. And so I thought, okay, AMS2 is going to have to fill a different role because, you know, even though some of the content is niche, it's most of it's not exclusive. You can find it elsewhere. But I just enjoy jumping in and, again, just hot lapping at any of the great tracks that they have in there. Or if I'm going to do a race, I like to introduce some sort of environment quirks like, you know, weather progression, time progression. Let's drive night into day. Let's try cloudy to rain to dry. And so it's just become my hop in and have a good time sim. ACC is very technical and I run my leagues through it. And it's very specific, very consistent in its physics. So it takes on a whole different role for me.
Right.
But AMS2 is the one I have the most fun in at this point.
Oh, that. You mentioned that you have 6 ACC leagues going.
Yeah,
that's sick. But I think it sums it up perfectly.
6? Yeah, I know. I need to get things going.
So many people knocking, looking in through the windows from the outside. Let me in. Yeah. So I think that was perfectly sums it up. It's a scenario sim. You know, I know Renato has said that their focus was single player gameplay. And we don't even have like a really fully functioning championship mode. There's still bugs that need to be ironed out. Yeah. We don't have a single player career at all. So him saying that that was their focus and we're so far away, there's a lot more room for AMS2 to grow. And then we still have obviously the rating system on the horizon. I wanted to get your take on something kind of like a hot topic, but AMS2 has been taking its lumps recently in the YouTube community. A lot of small channels, a lot of big channels have been kind of just piling on AMS2 and using the words like Simcade, you know, how it's not realistic, and then comparing it to Project Cars 2 and saying it's no better than that. Do you have any thoughts on that whole like kind of controversy?
Yeah, I mean, it seems to take its lumps more than most simulators, which is interesting. I think it's that easy line from AMS2 to Project Cars 2, the Madness engine. It's there. There's similarities that are right at the surface. You can see it. And so many people in the sim community hated PC2. It's just a bad association. It's right. You know, it's like having an infamous last name. Right? Like, I mean, no matter what you do, you can't escape it. And I think that's plagued AMS2. I know what you're talking about the YouTubers that have been critical of it. The biggest one recently was Jimmy Broadbent. He actually, I think I posted something on Twitter and he responded saying, is it worth it? I haven't tried AMS2 in a year. Should I try it again? And I said, yeah, go try this. And he did. He put out a video and he was critical of it. I can't remember if Simcade was the word he used, but he didn't feel connected with the cars. And I have zero issue with that personally. And I was in the Razor forums after that video dropped, and I know people were really upset. You know, the backers of AMS2 were really upset that he said that. And personally, I didn't mind it because any sim, I think ACC is probably the most well-rounded sim of this era, but you don't have to look hard to find detractors. Like, there's going to be critics of whatever you put out into the world. And I think Jimmy saying it was Simcade, that's his opinion. He's totally entitled to it. Yeah. I don't think
he said that word per se. I think there was other ones that used that term, but he had a problem with some of when he saved the DPI at the bus stop chicane in Daytona, he said he couldn't do that. So there was a sort of a flavor of realism going on there.
Right.
That he was kind of like questioning. And I think that sort of fueled the fire, so to speak, when he said those he was negative towards it, everyone else sort of kind of felt empowered to say, oh, well, Jimmy says it, so I might as well just piggyback on him.
Right.
Yeah, so that kind of.
So yeah, Jimmy saying that, you know, it's not realistic. I have no idea. I've never driven a race car in my life. He has. So he might be coming from a position of knowledge saying that it doesn't drive realistic. I can't say that it does or does not. For me, so much of sim racing, and I think people overlook this, even though it's so fundamental, is do you have a good time playing this title? And for me, the answer is 100% yes. And I think it's easy to sort of get bogged down in the, you know, the tire model and, you know, like Project Cars 2 was criticized to no end for technical details. And in some cars, it did ruin the experience. But I haven't found that with AMS2. I mean, in select cases, yes, especially early in development, there was bugs within certain cars that that, you know, made it not enjoyable to drive, but overall I really love it. So if people want to criticize AMS2 and say it's not realistic, they're more than welcome to. If they're coming from a place of knowledge, or they've compared it to real life, and you know, there's, you know, distinctions between what we get in that sim versus what we see in the real world race cars, fine, totally valid criticism. Mm-hmm. But for me, I am able to look past that, and I'm able to enjoy myself in the sim, and that's going to be my mentality going forward, is I'm having a great time driving it. So that's what's important to me, and there's nothing so bad in the physics that it ruins the experience for me.
Right. I always thought that there was a big confusion in sim racing, and I'm relatively new to this industry. I've only been deep into it for about, you know, 2 years, and I've never been deeper than I am right now. But they always the term physics. What does that mean? Like for me, from what I'm reading, it could mean everything. It could mean tire model. It could mean default setups. It could mean base car parameters that are behind the scenes and hidden. It could mean force feedback.
Right.
So whenever someone criticizes, you know, a sim, it doesn't have to be AMS2, they'll say something's wrong with the physics. And then after that, you're just like sort of, okay, what do you mean by that?
Right.
I'm at that point now. It's like, what about the physics is not connecting with you? Mm-hmm. And it could be something that they don't understand about, you know, how the tire model's working, you know, or it could be something that they feel in their wheel that's not right, or it's... I always thought that sometimes that people have like real high-end wheelbases, maybe they're getting too much information and they don't know how to scale it back. You know, have you ever had that thought? Like, I know you could have ACC where everything's real nice and everyone loves it with their high-end wheelbases, but it never really connected with me with my T300. But then I came into AMS2 and I felt like all of these different, you know, the scrub, the, you know, the braking, you can feel the brakes, you can feel the lockups. You know, all of the weight of the car shifting, I felt that was so, it was all there for me. Do you think that the social media, I guess, the social media culture that we have today is sort of confusing this topic, this whole subject of which sim is which is more realistic? And is it possible to have a sim be realistic? I mean, ultimately, we're trying to simulate a feel of the pants that's not realistic through a wheel, your wheel.
Right. I mean, it's definitely possible, because, you know, if you go to, and this is obviously not something that you and I will likely get to experience, but I mean, the top racing teams in the world have simulators that simulate their real world counterparts to the degree that minor adjustments made in the sim are applied to the real race car and, you know, makes it faster or more drivable. So it is possible. But I think at some point the developers have to say, okay, this is worthy of release to the public. Like, we could sit here and tweak the finer details, the ones and zeros, from now until forever. But we need to get this out to the public. We need to start, you know, making some of this development money back. So at some point, I think a developer has to make those sacrifices. And you bring up a good point that physics is such a broad term and it's thrown around, and you see people saying, you know, Project Cars 2 has bad physics. period. And it's just like, well, what do you mean by that? What makes it have bad physics? And I guess the closest thing I could get to a firm definition of physics in sim racing is, do your inputs, do your pedal and wheel inputs produce something in the game that is akin to the real world? And one of the biggest tells of whether or not that's working is, do the lap times correspond to the real thing? And that, I think, is validation for ACC, because you see highly skilled sim racers able to produce times right around the same time that the real world drivers are doing, best case. And I mean, you get somebody in a sim with infinite time, infinite laps, and no risk of getting hurt, and they start to produce slightly better times, but overall those times are so close to the real world that you could say, okay, Kunos has done a great job with the physics. And so that to me is sort of the litmus test of the physics in the game. Again, do my inputs make sense with what the car is doing, and is the end result similar to what the real world cars are doing? So I agree with you that it's tough to pin down. It's a blanket term. People will just throw away an entire game under the guise of it's got bad physics, but they don't really get into defining it. So it's definitely an area where there's a lot of room. But and in terms of social media, to answer your last question, it definitely, things can gain momentum online. So if you go in and you say Automobilista 2, their tire model is nowhere as good as AMS 1. Reza has taken a step down between titles, and that can gain steam. Depending on who says it, people will latch on and say, you know what, he's right. And it can be good and it can be bad, because if somebody with the big reach goes into AMS2 and says, you know what, I had a tremendous time, I took this car out to this track and it was beautiful and I had such great time, congratulations Reza, that can gain steam as well. So it's, social media is just something that games, developers, sims fans have to navigate, right? And but it's definitely a sort of momentum of ideas type scenario.
Right. I always feel like sometimes that I'm kind of caught in my own bubble within a bubble. So I'm in my AMS2 bubble, right? Mm-hmm. And then I'm in a sim racing, you know, YouTube forum bubble. But I think I'm like, every once in a while I'm thinking, you know, probably 90% of people that just, you know, play these games aren't YouTube commenters, you know, they're not forum complainers or, you know, engaging in forums or whatever or anything. So I trying to reach those people is probably the most important thing for a YouTube content creator like yourself or myself,
right,
as well. But look, let's talk about AMS2 a little bit farther. Where do you think that this sim is heading? Well, actually, I wanted to ask you what your favorite car was.
I think
that would be an interesting.
Wow, that's a tough one. I'm going to. It's such a.
What about category?
I wish I had a deeper answer than this. It's so lame. But the Porsche, that the newer, I guess it's 2017 or 2018 Porsche RSR. I think it's fantastic. It's got the sounds that were the same ones implemented into the Assetto Corsa mod. And I just love it. Those sounds, the visuals, the handling, I think they absolutely nailed it. I could take it out to any track and just enjoy hot lapping, or I can throw another group of GTE cars out there, maybe mixed class, and I just have a great time every single time. Again, it's a cheesy answer because, of course, everyone loves Porsche. Porsche is so ubiquitous in the world of sim racing now. Everybody knows it, loves it. I wish I had something deeper than that. Second favorite, perhaps, as a hot lapping car, I don't remember the model numbers, but it's one of the F3 cars. You guys know off the top of your head which F3 cars they have in AMS2?
301 and 309.
309, thank you. The 309, I love it. I take it out to you know, these South American tracks that I don't know well and just use it as a learning tool. And the handling is so precise. Everything about those cars is just really, really great. It's just the perfect teaching tool for sim. You can push the car really, really hard, and it's not going to burn you too hard at the limit. And it's just a great, great car.
So
Agreed.
where does AMS2 go from here? Like we have, I think you're, the Porsche RSR is fantastic. And I think if I had a nickel for everybody said that was their favorite car, I'd be a rich man. But where do we go from here? They have a solid GTE class, which I feel is they're probably their best class that they've introduced in this game thus far, comprehensively. And as far as the setup work is concerned, they have a human touch to them. Most of the other cars, and I don't know if you know that much about setups, but I religiously dig deep into the telemetry for these things. These things were actually manufactured for us, and I think that's the proof that the game can provide these awesome driving experiences. But where do we go from here? Are we looking, are you more of the fill out the classes that we have, or are you more of the make the fixes to the game, or where do you think that AMS2 should head in right now in this?
Personally, and I've seen this work for other developers and other titles, is I think Reza, if I was on any sort of advisory committee for them, I would say focus on building the community, because I what I'm fearing is happening is if you go into the Reza forums, a great bunch of guys, and I'm on there quite often, and we're discussing the finer details of AMS2, and everybody loves it, it's great. But I'm scared that that's sort of becoming a smaller and smaller group, and that mainstream sim racing is starting to just sort of occasionally look over the fence at AMS2 and, oh, cool, new cars. And it's not really gaining that mainstream. So what I'm hoping is that the community starts to grow. I'd like to see Reza focus on getting more content out there, more screenshots, more engagement with the community. Because again, I was talking about the momentum of ideas on social media. And if you can publish enough content about anything, it can become more popular. And I think I would love to see that from Reza. I would love to see them really start to bring the community in and showcase more of people like yourselves, the content you're making around AMS2, which is fantastic, and it'd be nice to see Reza sharing that and just getting more word out and building that community, growing the community. The content, there's more than enough content to go around. Would I like to see the classes filled out? Yeah, of course I would. But that takes time, and I know there's probably a year or two left in development, so those will come, I'm sure. But I think getting other humans engaged and not becoming some niche within a niche of, hey, those are the AMS2 guys over there. They're not part of sim racing. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to see a divide form. I would love to see more and more community engagement and just bringing people in, if only with screenshots. Like, I mean, we're in the Instagram era where, if you can get a really catchy screenshot picture, it can go viral and people get really interested in whatever you're talking about just based on a still shot. And I think Reza should push hard on that and just keep building that community.
That's really, really good points. But we're coming critically close to the hard stop point. So I wanted to, well, first, I neglected to say congratulations on your new role with Race Department.
Oh, thank you.
So I
Thank you
wanted
so
to
much.
wrap this up and allow you to describe to everyone listening, your new role with Race Department and then the future of Sim Racing 604.
Yeah, so thank you. I have taken the role as lead writer at Race Department, which is amazing. No word of a lie, I check Race Department 5 to 10 times each day to see,
Wow.
what's new in terms of community news, but also in terms of mods for Assetto Corsa or Factor 2, that kind of thing. So to be
Yeah.
brought into that group is amazing. As far as the future of the channel, admittedly, it's kind of slowed down right now. I'm still trying to fall into that new role as writer, but I have no intentions of stopping my channel. It's been very good. I've met amazing people. It's opened up incredible opportunities for me, and I don't want to for a second take that for granted. As I say, it's kind of slowed right now, but I'm just sort of trying to find a routine and get back to making regular video content. So it's been just an amazing experience to this day, and I'm very thankful for it. And thank you to you guys for having me on the show.
Well,
This was
it's our
awesome.
honor. It's our
Thank
honor,
you
Mike.
too.
It really is. It Thank you for joining us, and I was happy that this thing came together the way it did.
Absolutely.
But yeah, again, thank you for coming. And that's it for episode 604 of the Boldcast. Oz and I have already started discussing a program for future episodes, and yes, this will be moving to a more podcast-friendly format. Also, we've already begun looking into it. So that's in the works. Coming up on the 27, we'll have the ARC Camaro, the M1 Pro Car, and my first look at the DTM class. In the meantime, thanks for listening and take care.